You're listening to Sipping on Some Crime podcast, hosted by Aaron. This podcast covers sensitive and triggering subjects, explicit language, and mature content which may not be suitable for children. As always, all parties are innocent until proven guilty.
Today, I will be covering Lillian Hedman Randolph's case. Hi, it's Aaron from the Sipping on Some Crime podcast, and I'm here today to tell you about Lillian Hedman Randolph, 56, who vanished from her home in Guthrie Center, Iowa, May 2nd, 1965. 9 days into the search for Lillian, her missing investigation would turn into a homicide, and 6 decades later, her case is still unsolved. Lillian Elizabeth Hedman was born in Duluth, Minnesota in 1908 to parents Gustav and Ann Hedman. When Lillian grew up, she became a teacher and would marry her long love, Bob O'Hare. They would have 2 children together, Henry, who they called Hank, and a daughter, Anne. As a teacher, Lillian worked through various schools throughout Minnesota, and she enjoyed playing piano, singing funny songs, crafting, and sewing, and she loved sewing so much she even made sure to teach her daughters how to sew. Lillian loved to travel, and in a time where many women didn't travel alone, she wasn't afraid to take a trip by herself. Lillian's children say that she was a gentle mother, she never raised her voice, and she just had a way about her. Unfortunately, Lillian's husband Bob would tragically die in an accident at home April 12, 1945. And in 1950, Lillian would meet and marry Roy Chapman and go on to have 2 more daughters, Wendy and Vicky. Roy would end up going off to Korea to fight the war, and when he came back, he just wasn't the same, and their relationship got very abusive, which led Lillian to divorcing him. Now, Lillian was a single mother of 4 children on a teacher's salary and was struggling to survive. It seems like Lillian didn't have a permanent position in any school, that she traveled from school to school as they needed her, which meant that her income was even more sparse. In 1958, Lillian would marry Howard Randolph, and he would adopt her 4 children, and they would move to Guthrie Center, Iowa. Howard and Lillian had known each other for about 20 years before they even began dating. They knew each other through mutual friends and family. It seems like at this point in Lillian's life, Howard had really charmed her. He had reconnected with her when she was in Duluth, struggling to financially provide for her children on a teacher's salary. And he came into her life saying that he wanted to love her, he wanted to love her children, and he wanted to make life easier for all of them. So Lillian packed up her belongings and her children, and they moved to Guthrie Center, Iowa, for the easier life. Wendy, Lillian's sister, would tell reporters at the Center Times, quote, "It was going to be Shangri-La, no more worries. There was a lot of hope," unquote. Yet, as we become to learn, Lillian and Howard's relationship was far from even good. There are letters written by Lillian, and there are accounts from her friends and family, as well as Howard's diary entries that would actually paint a picture of a physically, financially, and mentally abusive marriage. Lillian actually loved Iowa, and so did her kids. Despite the really, really bad times, they did have good times with the friends that they made in Iowa. Those in Guthrie did not like Howard, but people put up with him because he had lots of money and lots of power, and he wasn't afraid to use it. Shortly after their arrival in Guthrie, all of a sudden, Howard started to isolate Lillian from her friends and her family. He would often leave her home alone with no transportation and no finances. Now, before Lillian and Howard got together, Howard had girlfriends all over the country in different states, and everybody kind of knew this, but it was expected that when he married Lillian, this behavior would stop. However, it didn't. Howard had no problem leaving Lillian at home with no transportation and only enough money for essentials while going out and seeing these girlfriends all across the country and lavishing them with expensive dinners and gifts. Lillian would meet and befriend a woman named Ruby, and while they had a 20-year age gap, they quickly bonded and began sharing stories of their lives together. Suddenly, Lillian really felt like she had a confidant in Ruby. Ruby always said that nobody liked Howard because he was rude, obnoxious, loud, and he wouldn't pay you back, and he was always looking to scam a buck out of you. But she did say that those in the community did like Lillian and her children. Lillian was very involved in community and school events and made many friends through those projects. And it seems like those friends just kind of looked past the fact that she was married to Howard. Howard wasn't just abusive to Lillian, but he was now abusive to his new children. Lillian would attempt to leave a few times, but Howard would always say that he was going to make it better and things were going to change, and Lillian would stay. While Howard didn't have a favorite child out of his newly adopted children, he did seem to go out of his way in particular to harass and harm Vicky, Wendy's little sister, from Lillian's second marriage. One time, Howard hit Vicky so hard across the face that her nose began to bleed, but Vicky wasn't going to give him the satisfaction he was looking for. In fact, she laughed in his face and walked off. Now, this story has been retold by Vicky and Wendy, but not only has it been retold by them, but this moment must have meant something to Howard because he wrote it in his diary entry. Some family members were even growing concerned over the course of Howard and Lillian's marriage over the way that Howard was with these little girls. Wendy was just 8 when they were married, and Vicky was her little sister, but there were times that Howard, in front of some other family members, would full-on kiss Vicky in the mouth while also putting his tongue in her mouth in front of people on more than one occasion. He was particularly cruel to Wendy and Vicky and seemed to get a kick out of causing them physical and emotional pain. Wendy said one time on her 15th birthday, she remembered getting this beautifully wrapped package from Howard. And when she went to open it, there was nothing in it. Another memory both girls recall is they had chickens in their yard, and there were these 2 chickens that were terrified of Howard. And Vicky and Wendy decided that they were going to try to sneak them out and help them get away. Howard would discover the girls trying to do this, and in his cruelty would snap up the 2 chickens, lie them on a table, cut their heads off, cut them open, take their eggs out, hard boil the eggs, and sit Vicky and Wendy down and make them eat them. I mean, his cruelty really had no bounds. These are the details that as the kids have grown into adults, they are starting to feel safe to retell. But these details, many of them are also backed up in Howard's diary and Lillian's letters to friends at home. Lillian didn't tell anybody in her community what was happening. She stayed relatively silent, that is, until she met Ruby. They instantly had a connection when they met, and it was like Lillian finally knew she had somebody that she could just trust with what was going on in her life. And she knew that Ruby would keep her secrets. And to this day, Ruby has still stated that there are things that happened between Lillian and Howard that she will never share, because they are Lillian's secret. So while Howard had plenty of money, he did abuse Lillian financially. There are many times where he would provide her with just enough money for necessities, and if she wanted anything outside of that, she would have to sneakily sell some of their belongings when he wasn't around and pocket that money. And smoking was a huge thing back then. A lot of people smoked cigarettes, and she wasn't ever able to afford to buy her own cigarettes. She would actually have to reach out to her friends if she wanted a pack of cigarettes. While all this abuse was going on, it seemed as if the community didn't see it, or at least they were turning a blind eye to it and not saying anything. By 1963, Lillian realized how fixated Howard was on her 2 little girls, and she knew she had to stop him and get them away from him. Lillian would successfully obtain a restraining order and also another order that required Howard to leave the home. He was also ordered to pay her monthly support. However, since Howard adopted these children, the court saw it as he was the father of these children and he had parental rights to see them. They were to stay with Lillian, and they would arrange visitation. People that knew Howard said that after all this happened, he was constantly complaining about how he didn't have the easy access that he had to the young girls like he did before. Howard would be allowed to return to the home one time to pack his belongings, and when Lillian knew he was coming, she was so terrified when she saw that he was coming down the road that she grabbed her little girls, and they ran across the street and hid in the bush while Howard packed his belongings. On May 2nd, 1965, which was Lillian's son's 27th birthday and Mother's Day, Howard came to pick up Vicky, now 14, and Wendy, 16, to take the girls to see an ice show in Des Moines. As Howard was pulling out of the driveway with Vicky and Wendy, Vicky suddenly felt like she had to stop and go out and give her mom one more hug. So she ran up the driveway to Lillian, who was standing at the top of the driveway, gave her a hug, told her she loved her, and then walked back and got in the car with Howard and Wendy. Wendy recalls, as they were pulling out of the driveway, seeing a white car pull into Lillian's driveway, and they found it strange. They even pointed it out to Howard, who just brushed it off. The girls knew that that day they were supposed to be attending an ice show with Howard. However, when he first picked them up, he was acting strange, erratic, stopping all day to make phone calls, and was driving aimlessly at times. Lillian's plans that day was to attend a mother and daughter banquet that she had been working on and organizing for months. So this is something that she wasn't going to miss. And Ruby was there waiting for her. And when Lillian didn't arrive, Ruby knew instantly something was very wrong. Howard would bring the girls back to Lillian's house around 6 p.m. that evening. And when they arrived, their mother's car wasn't there and neither was she. When the girls walked into their mother's home, it was undisturbed, it was quiet, and none of her belongings were gone that they noticed. As the night went on and Lillian didn't come home, Wendy tried to be optimistic, thinking that maybe she went on a short trip and she'll be back soon. But then the dread of reality began to set in. And Wendy said, quote, "Deep down, I knew that something very bad had happened, and it was the end of my childhood. You could feel it coming. Any innocence was gone," unquote. It would be 9 days later when Lillian's remains were found in the trunk of her car, parked in the Des Moines airport. When they found the car, Lillian's keys were in the ignition, and her purse, which had $11, was tucked under the seat. When they opened the trunk, they found that Lillian had been stabbed multiple times. The investigators that were first on the scene described the scene as a professional killing. Once investigators found Lillian, they went straight to Howard and began questioning him. Both girls would mention to investigators the strange car that was pulling into the driveway the day that their mother disappeared and that they pointed it out to Howard. However, Howard told investigators he never saw a car. And that's when Wendy said she knew that Howard was responsible for her mother's murder. They knew Howard well, and while they were young, they knew that day in particular, Howard's behavior was even more erratic and strange than usual. And now he was just lying to investigators. Ruby said once she learned about Lillian's murder, she started locking her doors because she was terrified that Howard knew how close they were and that he might harm her. A few months after Lillian's murder, she would see Howard in the grocery store, and as she was picking up her daughter to load her into the shopping cart, Howard walked up and offered to help her. And she said, "Do not touch my daughter, get away from her," kind of threw a little scene, and he ended up walking away. But she wanted it clear that she wanted nothing to do with him and to stay away from her family. From the jump, investigators knew that Howard was a great suspect. He had all the motive to kill Lillian. He was paying her close to $1,000 a month in spousal support in 1965. And just a month before her death, she had gone to her lawyer to ask him if there was a way that they could make a deal with Howard, a one-time deal where he gives her $22,000 and then he can have the house back and then she and her daughters will just leave and never bother him again. Lillian's plan was to take that $20,000, move somewhere new, and start a new safe life for her and her children. While Howard had a solid alibi because he was with Lillian's children the whole day, investigators said that did not rule him out. There were plenty of neighbors and witnesses in the area that saw the same white car that the girls saw, a white Cadillac pulling into the driveway of Lillian's house as Howard was pulling out. Neighbors would also tell investigators that those same two men were spotted sitting on a bench outside of the golf course earlier that day, and that bench happens to face perfectly in front of Lillian's house. They also saw those same two men sitting on the bench leave the bench when Howard's car entered the neighborhood. Investigators believe that Howard hired these two men to either kill Lillian or abduct her and bring her to him so he could kill her. But they were never able to gather enough evidence. And in fact, a few years after her murder, they were able to prove that Howard had rented and stayed the night in a Des Moines hotel the evening that Lillian disappeared. But still, even with that, there wasn't enough evidence to tie him to Lillian's murder. Lillian had disappeared on the 2nd of May, and by the 26th of May, investigators had interviewed over 850 people and went back to a few of them numerous times. And while investigating Lillian's murder, a young high school girl, 17, Janice Snow, would vanish after returning home from Easter shopping with friends. 2 days later, her remains would be discovered in a wooded area south of Des Moines, and she had also been stabbed multiple times. So police did look into this lead, but despite them both being stabbed multiple times, there's really nothing else connecting the two cases together. So investigators ruled out any connection. 5 years later, in 1970, investigators would close Lillian's case, saying that they had exhausted all leads and evidence. Lillian's case would sit closed for another 10 years, be re-examined 10 years later, and finally reopened in 1990. Wendy would receive a call from the district attorney's office around this time asking if she'd be willing to testify against Howard, and she said yes, but unfortunately, nothing ever happened after that call. After Lillian's death, Howard did not remain the guardian of Vicky and Wendy, but he did spend countless dollars and hours trying to gain custody of them. And even Howard's mother said that he had a sick perversion and obsession with the girls. Howard would move back into the home that him and Lillian shared, and the girls would go with their brother, Henry. A lengthy custody battle ensued, 4 years, but luckily Wendy turned 18 and was able to age away from Howard. By the time Vicky was 16, a trusted friend and an attorney would end up winning custody over Vicky and keeping her safe from Howard. Wendy would eventually leave Iowa behind and go to California to start a new life. And California is where her father was from. Wendy says, looking back as children, they were always sadly expecting her mother's murder. In the years, even the months, leading up to her death, Lillian was constantly leaving notes around the house titled, "In the Event of My Death." They all know now that their mother was just trying to make preparations for her impending death. Howard would end up being diagnosed with colon cancer, but live until 1994, never being charged for Lillian's murder. The town residents of Guthrie were not sad to see him go. There was no sympathy for his loss in that community. In 2009, the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation would establish a cold case unit to help cases like Lillian, and she was one of the 150 cases that they re-examined. Unfortunately, just a few years into the cold case unit, they would lose their funding, and these cold cases would go back into the pile of current cases, and the department would only have time to look at them when new leads or evidence arose. Wendy resents the fact that Howard was never charged with her mother's murder. She said, quote, "There are so many times I wish I shot him. I wished I killed him, and I never thought about it. That sounds awful, but he was a really horrible person," unquote. Wendy would go on to build a beautiful life in California. She had her own children, and she was able to share beautiful memories of her mother with her children. She taught her children that her grandmother was a very good woman who cared deeply and loved people. Lillian's daughter Anne would pass away before ever seeing justice for her mother. And now the other three siblings wonder if those in Guthrie even remember their mother. The last article I could find where Wendy was interviewed was written in 2015 by Rebecca McKenzie in the Guthrie Center Times. I will make sure to link that article in the show notes and, of course, on my Sipping on Some Crime webpage for those that are interested in reading it. She did a phenomenal job covering Lillian's case, and I always want to highlight local journalists because there are many times for victims and their families that those local journalists are their only voices in the media. This article is titled, "A Really, Really Good Woman," and Wendy is quoted as saying, "Even 50 years, I can't even think about it. It's just something that makes me shake. It's a trauma that hits your gut to this day," unquote. You can help Wendy and her siblings by sharing Lillian's case and making sure that she is not forgotten in her community. Wendy said, despite her mother's murder being decades ago, it still affects her every single day. But she is blessed to share the memories of her mother with her friends and family on social media. If you have any information about Lillian Randolph's unsolved murder, please contact the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation at 515-725-6010. Thank you so much for taking the time to get to know Lillian today. And don't forget, when you see those missing and murder posts on social media, to click like, share, and retweet. Every time we share a face, we get closer to solving a case. Until next time.